Welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, your host for this Wednesday. Coming up, things to talk about, things to learn about. We will check in with SAIL, an agency that helps the elderly and those with disabilities maintain their independence, especially tough to do in these days of the pandemic. Also, lifelong lessons from the stage, part of the Perseverance Theater summer camp experience. And garden therapy, one path to well-being the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners Association wants to help you explore. In the forecast, looks like plenty of rain for those plants. Scattered rain showers tonight, otherwise mostly cloudy, a pattern that we will see continue through Friday. Lows tonight in the lower 40s, highs tomorrow in the upper 50s. Juno Afternoon will be right back after National Native News.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha ane kak, gunil cheesh.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us today. I'm Rhonda McBride. Most of us at some point in our lives will experience a disability of some kind, perhaps due to aging, perhaps due to sudden developments in our lives. We just never know. But Southeast Alaska Independent Living, also known as SAIL, will be there to help us navigate. And I just love that acronym, SAIL. And joining us, Tristan Knutson-Lombardo and Sarah Wallace. Tristan is the Assistant Director for SAIL. Sarah Wallace, the Employment Specialist. And Tristan, I thought that I would start off talking about that acronym, SAIL. What does it mean to you?
Thanks, Rhonda. You know, it's funny that you asked that question because so often people hear SAIL and they think sailing on the sea or the ocean or sometimes sailing to the air. And I really think that it's maybe overused at times, but still a fun acronym and image to play with. But I think it really does play well and nice with our mission of inspiring personal independence for people with disabilities and seniors. And independence looks different for everyone, no matter where they come from. And I think about that, the sense of freedom you get if you're sailing along, the independence, being able to navigate your own journey. I think if we're going to play with this idea of sailing, I really think it ties nicely into the journey, the personal journey of independence for everyone and how that looks different.
Well, I'm glad you clarified that you are not a yacht club.
Yeah.
So, Sarah, what does that acronym mean to you?
Yeah, I'll play off of that. I also really identify, I love the independent living philosophy. And I think that it has a lot to do with navigation. When we inspire personal independence, we really listen to everyone who we work with and we let them choose their way and choose their path. And so I think it's a great acronym. I think it's about moving forward and choosing your own course and self-navigation.
So for people that may not be familiar with SAIL, maybe you could talk about how SAIL works with people with disabilities, how they connect. Tristan?
Yeah, we are Southeast Alaska's Aging and Disability Resource Center. We're also what's called a Center for Independent Living. And so that means that we work one-on-one, sometimes in groups with people. People come to us, they say, this is who I am, this is my disability, or I'm a senior. These are the barriers or the hurdles that I'm facing in my life to being independent, to living a dignified, safe life. And then this is where I want to go. Can you help me? And so a lot of times we're like the first place that people come because maybe they've become recently disabled, their disability has changed, maybe they're a family or a caregiver coming and they're asking questions about options for support. So we do a lot of talking through here are the options for you when it comes to employment or in-home care or recreation. Here are the things that you can do. What feels right to you? How do you want to move forward? And then working and supporting them in that direction. And it really, it spans the spectrum of things. Sometimes people say, I need a ramp to get in and out of my house because I can't leave my house right now. Or You know, maybe they're a youth that they're graduating from high school and they're like, I don't want to live with my parents anymore. I want to live independently on my own. And so sometimes you never know what walks through the door or what's on, who's on the other end of the phone. But it really is a diverse spectrum of experiences and goals for independence.
So Sarah, sometimes it maybe doesn't take a lot to help accommodate somebody. Sometimes are the changes fairly simple? Not always, but.
Yeah, sometimes it's just help having someone, I'm helping someone apply for a job or giving them, you know, crutches while they recover from an injury. Or just referring them to a resource that they didn't know was in town. So sometimes we can interact with them for a day or two, and we've been interacting with some people for years.
So it's a broad spectrum. Well, I'm looking at both of you. We're talking on Zoom, and you must be 20-somethings. You look young, fresh-faced, full of energy. Shine a little of that energy on us in this show. But, you know, It's very inspiring to see that young people have taken, you know, made it their calling to work to help people with disabilities. So, Tristan, how did you come to this profession?
I having grown up in Juneau, when I was in high school, the staff working at SAIL at the time, our executive director, Joan O'Keefe, and Sierra Jimenez had reached out about helping with our biggest fundraisers, The Only Fools Run at Midnight. So some folks may have heard SAIL putting on this event. We don't do it anymore. I had never heard of SAIL. I was like, sure, I'll come and help. And then the more that over the years as I volunteered through high school and college, the more I got to learn about the agency. When I finished school, a job opportunity opened up and I thought, you know, sure, I've been working with SAIL and learning a bit more about them. And now, you know, 12 plus years later, I'm still here with the agency. And I will say that things have shifted for me. Disability was not, disability rights advocacy really wasn't something on my radar before working at SAIL. And it really has shifted my world view and lens. I can't not walk somewhere or be somewhere on the internet and think about how are people with disabilities, as diverse a group as that is, how is this experience for somebody who's blind or somebody who's in a wheelchair or somebody with a cognitive impairment or a traumatic brain injury, and what are we doing that either includes or excludes those people from participating or engaging? And it really, it's something that I will forever carry with me now in the world as a broader and greater awareness and sense of advocacy, really.
Well, I think when people are young, they're invincible and nothing ever happens to them. And so it's hard for them to imagine being disabled in some way, unless, you know, they have a family member or a friend who has experienced something. So Sarah, what brought you to SAIL?
So similarly to Tristan, disability rights and advocacy was not something that I was planning on pursuing, but I actually got involved with the ORCA program, which is our outdoor recreation program. I was a volunteer during ski season. They bring people up there every Saturday and Sunday and they ski. And so I would volunteer and I assisted a few individuals and I absolutely loved it. I love skiing. And so I thought it was amazing that there was all this technology that people were given access to. There's a bi-ski, there's different devices where you can sit on a ski sitting down. And so I got introduced to all the technology and introduced to the individuals. And then I just kind of stuck around and kept up with SAIL, and a position opened up, and I've been here only for a few months.
But it sounds like you've found a place that's a good fit for you and some of the past experiences you've had. But right now, I guess you are working with people on employment, and I'm just kind of wondering, what kinds of things do you do to help people?
Yeah, so a majority of the people that I work with are young, around the ages of 17 to 20. It's a lot of kids who are about to graduate high school or who have and are trying to figure out what to do next in life. School is a place that creates a lot of structure, and it can be really intimidating to leave that structure and figure out what you're going to do next and, you know, really develop. You have a lot of freedom when school ends, and so that can be really intimidating. So I kind of am just someone to make it less scary and just, you know, help them through. We work very closely with the DVR, which is the Department of Vocational Rehab. And so I help connect them to counselors there. I help them apply. And then I also do some job coaching. So I interact with businesses in town and I educate them on what it would be like to hire someone with different kinds of disabilities and what accommodations we can make. It can be really simple, just where, you know, I go in for a few days and I make a list of all the tasks that need to get done. And I go through with the individual and then we set up a system where, you know, they'll be able to do it independently eventually. So one of my favorite parts of the job is problem solving and figuring out how we can make a job work and how we can make, you know, someone feel like they are making their own money and have the autonomy to spend it the way they want to. And, you know, just have more independence. And a lot of times for the kids, when they feel like they start making money, then they feel like they might be able to, you know, move out of the house or buy something they really wanted, maybe a vehicle. So I really help with people's transition, I think, from school to the workforce. That's what mainly what I've been doing so far.
You know, I think one of the hardest things for people to maybe understand, especially for someone who has a disability that really sort of takes them out of the mainstream of everyday life, that there is this need to feel useful. And even people with disabilities, especially people with disabilities, have that need, and employment is one of many ways to do that. Do you find that is so central to helping people sort of cope with their disabilities, is that feeling of being useful, productive?
Yeah, it's really awesome that you said that, because a lot of the times I'll ask them questions like, what is your favorite part about a job? Or what do you, you know, what are you the most inspired doing? And a lot of the times it's helping people or feeling like they made a difference or starting a project and then finishing it. I think that a lot of people go through life, you know, and they feel most fulfilled when they feel like they're doing something productive and they have somewhere to be and they're a part of something. So, yeah, just being part of, you know, a lot of us are part of a work culture that is part of our community. And so, you know, everyone who has different kinds of disabilities wants to be a part of that community too. And they want to be working towards the same goal. So, it's been really great to connect with businesses in town that are also willing to help us SAIL achieve that goal. And I'm always open to connecting with more businesses. So if anyone's listening and thinks they'd be interested in, you know, working with someone, I'd love to connect.
So Tristan, there must be a real value in sort of having the community be a part of the problem solving.
Absolutely. Collaboration actually happens to be a core value of one of our core values. And we absolutely recognize that the work that we do isn't done alone in an office behind a closed door. It's done outside in the community with our partners, whether they're collaborating agencies or businesses or people that donate to our work, that volunteer their time. If our vision is to build communities or enhance our communities in Southeast so that they're inclusive and accessible to everyone, regardless of age or ability, then we have to be engaging with our communities in this work. And it's not about doing work for somebody, it's about doing work with someone and really letting you know, that individual kind of drive the vision for where we're going and the goals, but bringing in our community partners.
That must have been really tough during COVID, because that required isolation.
It was really hard. And for a lot of people that we work with, everyone said, well, we can do things virtually. We have our, you know, things are online now, Zoom. And but if you don't have internet or you're, you know, not someone who's very tech savvy, it just became all the more difficult to continue to engage. And so, this last 15, 16 months were really difficult for a lot of people.
So are you starting to come out of the COVID mode here?
We are. Our office is back open to the public. So whether calling is easier, but if coming in and saying, getting your taxi voucher card refilled or loaning that loan closet item or just having a in-person conversation, we are ready. The ORCA program and sale have reopened the Eagle Valley Center Challenge course for those that remember that. That is open and running, and we're hosting groups out there. So we are really trying to be mindful of space and vaccines and masks, but we really want to continue to provide services in a meaningful way.
Well, you were talking about this challenge course. For those people who may not have experienced it, and I know that I've heard that it was part of many people in Juneau, their coming of age experience. Can you give us some examples of what happens on a challenge course?
Yeah, so it's also called a ropes course. So we have different elements. There's high elements and low elements. And it's a lot of just, you know, doing something that seems very intimidating, taking your time. And so there, you know, it can be everything from you're strapped into a harness and you climb up to this big log that you have to walk across, and balance. And while everything's safe, it still can feel very intimidating. And it's all about trusting yourself and building confidence. We also have a lot of lower elements that are about team building. So we'll bring groups out there. It's a great place if, you know, you're trying to break the ice with a new group that's going to have to be working together. It's a lot about problem solving and relying on each other. So we have a lot of different elements, and, you know, different courses can be designed different ways based on the goals. Our ORCA team has been trained to use the ropes course and also trained in facilitation. So a lot of great team building exercises. We used it. We have a summer work program that we've been doing, and we brought our crew out there last Friday, and we had a couple kids who said they were really afraid of heights and didn't want to do it at all. And by the end of the day, we had everyone up there smiling and just feeling like they really worked together. And like, you could tell by the end that they really felt closer to each other after having a shared experience. So I'm really excited about it. We're going to have some more camps later this summer focused on different things. And we hope to involve the community as much as we can.
Well, it seems like a challenge course is a good fit for an agency that prides itself on being able to solve problems. And I imagine that still coming out of COVID, that you've got some challenges that you're trying to help people with.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the things that you're doing as we come out of COVID, besides reopening the challenge course?
One thing that I really want the community to know is that we have a partnership with the city and Juneau Taxi to give, if you're a senior or a person with a disability and you need a ride to or from your vaccination appointment, we want to make sure that you can get there, remove that barrier. And so it's as easy as calling our front office, and our number is 888-478-7245, and we can get you, make sure you get to and from that appointment if transportation is a barrier. We also are working on getting back out into the community, so for people that are looking to become employed again, you know, find meaningful employment, they can work with Sarah. You know, figuring out how do we work with people individually to get them back out of the house or back into the meaningful life that perhaps they were living that was disrupted by COVID.
So in wrapping things up, do you think that we are in a special time in our history, especially with the re-emphasis on social justice? We've had the Black Awareness Movement, and other groups coming up. What, this is Gay Pride Month. And what about the frontiers for people with disabilities? Are they a group that gets heard?
I would say, you know, statistically about 1 in 5 Americans experience a disability of some type. And disability, you know, we define at SAIL a disability pretty broadly. Oftentimes we think about somebody in a wheelchair or somebody who is deaf. But we also, there are most disabilities aren't readily visible. Whether it's a traumatic brain injury or somebody with multiple sclerosis, you might not know that somebody has a disability, but yet so many of our neighbors and our family members do. But we don't see people with disabilities reflected in leadership positions, elected officials. It's not something, despite the vast number of people that experience a disability, we don't talk about it in the mainstream. And so if this pandemic has really taught us anything, it's that it's highlighted the divisions that already exist in our world. And so seniors, people with disabilities, disproportionately affected, dying from COVID-19, isolation in their home. So I would say, I hope the new frontier is that we're learning from this experience, that here's an opportunity to say whose voices aren't at the table, who's not represented in the room, and hopefully people with disabilities are part of that discussion, because so often they're left out.
Well, Sarah, we'll let you have the last word here. If there was one thing you could do to change people's minds, open their eyes, what would that be?
That's a great question. I think it would just be, think about things that you do every day and how easy they are, and think about if, you couldn't do those. If it took a lot longer for you to open a door, or took a lot longer for you, or, you wouldn't be able to go on a walk. I just think, I would also say engaging with people who do experience disabilities, because I think there are a lot of preconceived notions that don't necessarily happen to be true. And I also think that it's such a broad population. Even one condition, a traumatic brain injury, that can look 1,000 different ways. And so I think just, getting involved, sales a great place to start, and just, volunteering and engaging with people with disabilities and seeing how you can make the world more accessible. That's what I would say.
Well, there's that slogan, make the world a better place, but I think yours would be make the world more accessible, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
I got your new slogan for you.
All right.
Well, we want to thank both of you, Tristan Knudsen-Lombardo and Sarah Wallace with Southeast Alaska Independent Living, or SAIL, and we'll let you sail away for now. I love that acronym, but do come back, and we really appreciate the insights that you're giving us into what people experience and what we can do to be better neighbors. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rhonda.
Thank you.
Well, you've heard the acronym SAIL. Well, we're going to try another one on you, STAR, as in Summer Theater Arts Rendezvous. Up next, we'll hear about a program that gives young people a chance to discover their inner artist.
Days, precious days, they roll in and out like waves. I got boards to bend, I got planks to nail. I got charts to make, and I got seas to sail. I'm gonna build me a boat with these two hands of lead. Fair curve from a noble plan. Let the chips fall where they will, 'cause I've got boats to build. My sails are just like wings, and the wind can make them sing songs of life, songs of hope, songs to keep your dreams afloat. I'm gonna build me a boat. Ships fall where they will, 'cause I've got boats to build. Now shore's distant shore, stars to guide my way, sailing to the light of day. I'm gonna build me a boat with these two hands. It'll be a fair curve from a noble plan.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Well, as Shakespeare said, all the world is a stage, and maybe learning something about theater at an early age can have some lifelong lessons about that world we call the stage, or the stage that we call the world. Perseverance Theater is offering young people at its summer camp known as STAR, as in Summer Theater Arts Rendezvous, a chance to immerse themselves in the arts. And we have joining us Caleb Bourgeois and Virginia Rolden with us, two people who are no stranger to the stage, an experience that started for both of them at an early age. And Caleb is a coordinator for STAR 2021. And I guess I would start off with you, Caleb, and then go to you, Virginia, about what some of your early experiences were with theater and maybe how they helped you find yourself.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having us, Rhonda. I'm so excited to be here with you and to be talking about the STAR program. I haven't been around Juno too long, probably only a few years now have I been working with Perseverance Theater. But many years ago, when I was about 5 years old, I got started in the theater doing opera, actually, with the Anchorage Opera. And just spent my whole childhood doing that. I basically grew up behind the scenes at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts. So you'll see my signature, my dad's signature on the walls back there in the hallways. Theater has always just been such a big part of my life and my family's life. And it was actually theater summer camps, though, that really made my whole year. It was like, that was all I wanted to do as a kid, was just go to theater summer camp, see all my friends, and get to play. And I think that was memories that I'll never forget, and skills that I learned that I don't know that I would have learned if I hadn't have been involved with the arts. So that was a huge part of my development. And so I'm just so excited to be able to pass that on to other young people in the STAR program.
Well, I remember seeing your father in some performances at the Flyby Night Club in Anchorage, and these were musical skits that were done that were hysterically funny, and yet then to see him involved with opera. So in your DNA is a lot of talent. It's nice to see that this legacy continues. So Virginia, from what I hear about you, you have probably been in about every play that was performed at your high school, middle school, and continuing on.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. The first production I must remember being in was in like kindergarten, but the first big one that I did was in eighth grade. And then it kind of just, I just fell in love with it and never wanted to stop. And, I've just really loved meeting like different people from different places and like making connections through theater that I would have never been able to make before if I had never joined. And I think my favorite thing about doing the STAR program is mostly just watching all these kids just grow up and fall in love with theater the same way that I did. So, yeah.
So what's the value of being involved with theater? Let's just say that maybe you don't pursue it as a career.
One of my first jobs out of high school was working in property management. And the only reason I got that job was I was scouted at an apartment complex by the leasing consultant that worked there. And they said, you have to meet our regional manager. And so next day I got an interview with him, and he said, we need more theater people like you who have the self-awareness and understanding to be able to make relationships with people in that work. And I think that that's one of the biggest soft skills that I took away from, doing theater camp every summer, was learning how to build relationships, learning how to work collaboratively. And all of those things have helped me in my professional career as well.
Agreed.
Well, how about insights into humanity? Because, of course, in theater, sometimes some deep and heavy issues are explored, maybe in ways that we can't talk about. What have you taken away from theater? Because when you play a role, you have to walk in someone else's shoes, literally.
Yeah, definitely.
What roles, Virginia, have you taken maybe that kind of expanded your horizons?
Well, I got to be evil in a show, and that was a lot of fun. Because I played the evil stepmother in Into the Woods. That was definitely a learning experience for me, because normally I played a lot of nice characters, so that was fun.
How about you, Caleb? Are there roles you think that were defining for you in raising your awareness about the world around you?
Absolutely. I would say one thing that comes to mind is a show I did in college, which was called When You Coming Back, Red Rider. And in that play, like Virginia, I played the villain, which normally I do not play villain because, like Virginia, I think I have this like sweet disposition that doesn't always get me cast in those roles. But one of my professors in college took a risk and cast me in that. And the show is about a veteran's experience post-Vietnam and the post-traumatic stress that person experienced, and how they took it out on other individuals. And as someone who, I've grown up around the military, being in Alaska, of course, but didn't have that direct experience. And it really allowed me to dig deeper into what that experience is, and had me looking at my own mental health and understanding of myself. And I think, those are such valuable experiences as an actor, to be put in someone else's shoes and to have to think about what that experience would be like. And it just helps us open our mind and deepen our compassion for each other. And that's certainly, I think, something that you can experience at any age in the theater.
But how about at Star? Why is that kind of the prime time to experience these things? And how does STAR take young people to a new level?
Absolutely. Well, I think particularly in the last couple of years, our program, because last year we were virtual, we had to completely reapproach our program altogether and work with students online over Zoom. And we took more of a mentorship approach, where each of our students was paired with a teaching artist and was able to create their own story, whether that was a multimedia video piece or a performance piece, a monologue or a play that they wrote. And I think giving the creative control to the students to drive their own experience and really explore creatively, what do I want to make? What do I want to put into the world? I think that's something that's really unique about STAR and our approach to this program in particular. And I think that that also allows the students to create a really safe space with each other, to be able to take those risks together and be able to be vulnerable with each other, which I think you have to learn those skills at a young age, because it allows you to build this personal resilience as you get older. And so I think those are definitely some skills that students would learn in STAR.
So Virginia, what are you looking forward to in this year's version of STAR? Because it's kind of a combination hybrid virtual in-person sort of camp.
Mm-hmm. This year, I'm honestly looking forward to like just learning the different setup that we're going through this year, since in past years it's been we've usually do like two or three productions of like a full show. So I think learning how to adjust to that's going to be really interesting and really fun. And I'm also just excited to be working with all the kids again, because that's always been my favorite part, is just like supporting them and helping them like learn to be who they are and helping them grow. And yeah.
Well, that seems like a lifelong project, to learn to be who we really are. We don't always feel free to do that. Just before we run out of time, do you want to give us the particulars on if we know young people that want to get involved in this, how do we access this?
Absolutely. So anyone can go to ptalaska.org/star2021. Also, if you punch that into Google, it'll probably bring that up right to the top of your search engine. There's two buttons on that page, register and request information. So if your student's ready to register today, hit that button and get your student involved. You can hit request more information if you want to apply for a scholarship, because there's scholarships available for Alaska Native students, and as well as all students can apply for a scholarship. And also volunteer opportunities, because we want to get the community involved and make sure that, you know, our community is taking care of our young people. And so, you know, we welcome volunteers as well. And again, this program goes July 19th through August 4th, ages 12 to 18. And there's an in-person program and a virtual program.
So it sounds like you may have the best of both worlds coming up for the young people.
I sure hope so. I am really excited, and I know a lot of kids are too.
All right. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us. And it's been really exciting to hear that programs like this have made a big impression on you, and glad that you're wanting to continue to share this. So thanks, both of you, for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for being here with us on Juno Afternoon today. I'm Rhonda McBride. For many Alaskans, the desire to get out and get your hands in the dirt is primal. And joining us now, two gardeners who know all about that feeling that builds up to a crescendo over the winter months. We have Pat Hartman and Christy Hooten. They are co-chair of the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners Association. And Pat, we will start with you. You know, at what point in the winter do you start feeling the call of the garden?
Well, I'm feeling the call for next year already, planning on what to do then. It's when you love to garden, it's kind of catharsis, and it can be a year-round calling for what you want to do, if that is your thing. But I do want to say that Christy and I are co-chairs of the Garden Tour. We're not actually co-chairs of the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners, just for clarification there.
Thanks for setting me straight there. But we will be talking about the tours coming up here in a moment. So, Christy, what is your call to the garden? When does it happen?
I agree with Pat. It happens now. I'm working on things right now, like prepping beds so that I can start filling them next year. So it's kind of all year round. You're always on the lookout for a new, you know, garden art piece or some seeds you want to order, getting things together, you know, and prepping for seed starting, you know, in March or so. And it's kind of all year long, but definitely for me, it really starts hitting like in January and February.
So I have to...
The days are so long and so dark.
So this is prime time for when it all sort of comes to fruition or starts to. So I'm just kind of curious with each of you, what's your current passion project that you're working on right now?
I'm currently digging weeds out of my free-flowing raspberry patch, and I'm getting that ready to reorganize it and get it more structured, make it less accessible to my dogs to wander through and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm working on my raspberry patch.
Well, raspberries seem to have a mind of their own, I guess. They dare to keep invading into new territory. How about you, Pat? What are you working on right now?
Well, I'm doing the same thing as far as trying to get the weeds out of the yard. We've had we're really about a month behind right now on what is normal. So I'm quite a ways behind because I had a trip out of town. And so now I'm kind of paying the price on that. Still working on getting some of the garden beds in and areas of my gardens is getting the garden art placed and putting in the new plants that I've got. So it's one of those things, it's always an ongoing occurrence, but I would say we're actually probably about a month behind normal. So that's made it really tough to get plants in the ground and know where we're going.
So how is this going to affect the annual garden tour that's coming up in July?
Well, the tour fluctuates every year. It's never on a set date. We're hoping we continue to have a little bit of rain and a lot more sunshine because that's helping those flowers come out on the gardens. The gardens that I've seen this week are looking really good, and I think they'll be ready for July 10th when the tour comes around. And you know, it's always a hit and miss here in Juneau. We can have sunshine where it pops out and everything's ahead of schedule, or we can have rain like what we've had this year and cold temperatures that puts everything behind. So hopefully the peonies hold out and everything will look absolutely great. And I know the garden owners are working hard and the garden should be really beautiful by then.
So, Christy, how do you go about picking the gardens that are going to be part of this tour? Or are there just some ongoing regulars that you resort to?
Well, actually, we do like to rotate the gardens. And, you know, it's always a bonus when we find a garden homeowner that we haven't visited before. It's also nice to revisit gardens every, I don't know, it kind of depends on how it goes, but 4 or 5 years because things change all the time. That, you know, they put in new features or new plants and, you know, the gardens mature. Some things that we look for are, you know, say, you know, if they have a unique feature. We also look for, you know, how accessible is it for the visitors? You know, will there be a parking problem? You know, are there, well, you know, of course, like tripping hazards, things like that. Those things are what we, you know, a few of the things we keep in mind.
So, Christy, I understand.
Availability, are those owners going to be available, you know, to do the pre-tour and also the tour?
Right.
And the pre-tour is for the docents and the homeowners, so they have a chance to visit the gardens, because they'll be busy on tour day.
So, I understand, Christy, that you're responsible for choosing this year's theme, which is garden therapy. How did that come about?
Pat was showing me pictures, and we liked the picture that's on the flyer. And I just got to thinking about, you know, how long the year has been, and, you know, it's been wet and cold spring. And I just started brainstorming, you know, in my head, garden therapy, and, you know, be revived and inspired and thrive.
Well, it has been a tough time with COVID and the isolation that people have had. But, Pat, I understand from talking to some gardening businesses that actually people have continued to buy a lot of supplies, so that from that they get a sense that a lot of people use their COVID isolation to return to gardening.
We had a garden tour last year that was probably our best ever. We had close to, I would say, between the docents and those that bought tickets, we had close to 200 people that came. They wore masks. It was outside. It was absolutely fantastic tour. I know both seeds and plants. Juneau's one of those places that, you know, you need to buy your plants and plan early because you're not going to find a whole lot of things in the fall, and you better be ordering if there's something really specialized that you want. It's the only place I've ever lived where if you see it, you better buy it because it's probably not going to be there tomorrow. Unfortunately, with COVID, all the seed catalog places had the same issue. Seeds were hard to come by last year. Even, you know, chicken manure for the primula was hard to come by. So you kind of learned that you need to stockpile, not necessarily hoard, but stockpile certain things. So you've got it and kind of watch for when they come in. And I think this year is the same as far as both the seed ordering and plants, if there's things that you need and certain products that are a little tougher to find than what they have been, because so many people, and it's not just Juneau, it's pretty much nationwide. There was a lot more people home, a lot more people working in their yards, a lot more people growing their own produce. So it's changed a little, and we'll see how it goes in the future on whether that loosens up or not.
Well, we're just about out of time. So quickly, can someone recap what they need to know if they want to jump on this garden tour?
Well, tickets are available on our website, seak-mastergardeners.org. There's headlines on the page. You just click the link for the garden tour. It'll take you through, and you can purchase your tickets. We'll have a garden guide online for them to print out. We'll also have a few on hand, too. There'll be a garden guide. And if they have any questions or want to nominate somebody for a future garden tour, they can use the info@seak-mastergardeners.org email address.
All right. Well, I have to thank both of you for joining us, Pat Hartman and Christy Hooten. Thanks so much. We got to go now, but thanks for bringing us up to date on the garden tour.
Thanks. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Support for Juneau Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit and Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
And we want to thank everyone for joining us for Juneau Afternoon. We will be back tomorrow with our Thursday program, our regularly scheduled culture-rich conversations presented to you by the Black Awareness Association. Everyone, have a great afternoon. Thanks again for joining us.